Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to One Up delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host, Guy Drinkle, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Carl Wilkinson. How are you doing, Carl?
I'm doing good, Guy. How about yourself?
I am very good. I'm very good. The World Cup just came back today, and it's back with a bang that we've just been talking about before we recorded, but we won't go into that too much. But if we need to fill time, we might mention it a bit. But we're here this week for your top 10 list, Carl. Is it already all set to go?
It is, and my God, this was a labor. Like, this is one of the most stressful things I've done in weeks. Like, I remember you were saying last week that yours was hard on WhatsApp, and I was like, oh, it can't be that hard. And then I went to do mine, and I was like, oh my God, getting it down to 10 games, ordering it. I hope it was worth the pain.
Oh, the thing is, one of the Twitter replies, I think it was from Craig, he said Star Wars, the Old Republic, and I was like, oh, for God's sake, I forgot about that. And then someone mentioned Crash Bandicoot Tag Team Racing, and I just died a little inside. But I'm sticking with the list I had last week on the pod, which I may post after a couple of weeks of it being out, just for ease of access, really. But similarly to last week, Carl, we'll go through a bit of news before we get into your top 10. So I'll read out the headline here. Slow news week, people, so don't be expecting too much big news. GTA Online is full of fake GTA 6 announcements. I've not heard or seen anything about this. As I said, slow news week. So, Carl, what's this about?
Yeah, so I heard about this while listening to another podcast earlier in the week, and I had a look into it. Like, I found it pretty bizarre how something like this can happen, but at the same time, then I have experienced similar things before. But I'll go into the story first. So this comes over from Kotaku, and it was written by Zach Zweezen. They just keep giving me hard names here, so I apologize if I butchered it. Or Zweizen, maybe. Anyway, Zach writes, many Grand Theft Auto Online players got a surprise when they started the game on July 1st. Some players received a message purporting to be from Rockstar Games, advertising GTA 6 was launching in 2019 and could be pre-ordered now. Unfortunately for those excited for a new GTA, the messages are fakes, likely being sent by players hacking the game. The messages are only appearing on PC, Xbox 360, and PS3. These platforms have been modded and hacked by players for years now, and it seems these in-game notifications are just another new exploit. I can't find any verifiable evidence that these messages are appearing on PS4 or Xbox One, platforms that have yet to be fully cracked by GTA 5 hackers. I played some GTA Online today and didn't receive any of these messages on PS4. The fact that these messages are only appearing on platforms that have been modded in the past and that these messages aren't being sent to all players seems to confirm these messages are fake and not from Rockstar Games. And the story was since updated to say that Rockstar has confirmed on Twitter that the announcement are fake. Quote, this is a hoax made with the use of mods and not an official message or statement from Rockstar Games. And you can find the full story over on Kotaku. So yeah, so basically it seems some modders decided, you know what, it'd be great. Let's troll some players and see what happens. And like, to be honest, I have Online in a while, but I'd imagine if I was playing it and like one of those, I remember those updates from when I did play it. I don't know about you, but if it comes up the little Rockstar logo and the message, I probably, at least for a minute, I thought about it. what do you think?
I mean, if it was really done well, I could kind of see where it's coming from, but no, I could never see Rockstar announcing a game by putting a message in another game. It just doesn't make that much sense to me. So if it was done really well, maybe, as you said, maybe for a minute or so, it'd probably get me. But after you've took it in, it'd just be like, no, that's clearly bullshit.
Yeah.
The fact it's not been on the current gen of consoles, I mean, screams that it's bullshit, doesn't it? As a Rockstar have came out and said so. Yeah, I think it's just someone taking the mick, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously we know by now it is, like, but it kind of always amazes me how people can effectively break these games. Like I remember it being a real problem with Call of Duties. Call of Duty was kind of like 3 or 4 years old and there was newer iterations, you know, you'd go on. I remember like my stepbrother got me on to play one of them once. I think it might have been Modern Warfare 2.
Mm.
And it like came on just like in all these bright colors, just like God mode enabled or something. And there's like some guy who's like invincible, just like killing everyone. What the hell is going on here? Like it's absolutely insane. Like, but it is some food for thought for me anyway. GTA 6. Like, do you have any kind of timeline in mind yourself, Guy, for when we might actually see GTA 6?
They do love a long development cycle, don't they, Rockstar? That's the thing. And there's rumours of Bully 2 being the next Rockstar game. So I don't. For me, I think GTA will be next gen, if I'm honest, the next one. I think 6 will be next gen. I know 5 was last gen coming onto current gen, and it took like a year or whatever it was to update and port it and stuff like that. But no, I think if the Bully 2 rumours are true, I think it'll be not launch, maybe the year after or something like that, but yeah, I think GTA will be far away. I mean, we saw how long it took to make Red Dead, and I know Red Dead and GTA are completely different, but GTA still has a lot to build into a game, and each year they seem to be making a more in-depth story, don't they? So if they're trying to make GTA 6 an even more powerful story, I mean, it's going to be hard to top 5's free interlinking stories. So it's going to be a hard game to make, and I know it's been... Well, when was GTA 5 out? Was it 2011? No, that was Skyrim.
I think it was 2012. I could be wrong, though.
Let's have a look. Good radio, this. 2013.
Yeah, because then the new consoles would have came out in 20... same year, yeah. So... yeah, no, I'd echo everything you've said there, to be honest. I mean, this isn't the Rockstar of kind of the PS2 era where they had like so many studios working on, you had like Bully, as you said, and GTA and Red Dead Revolver and even they had some portable games in development, like all at the same time. They've kind of trimmed back on their studios and the amount of projects they have going at once. And funny you mentioned Bully, because like I was listening to people on the podcast saying that they were talking about how it'd be Red Dead and then GTA, but that GTA could be a few years. But I was like, I listened to it, I was like, I swear that there was Bully 2, like a sequel to Bully, was going to be coming out soon. I'm like, why haven't they even mentioned that? Like, so I'm glad you've mentioned it, because that means that I didn't make that up. You know? There's some.
It does seem. I know gaming room is always, you can always have to take on with a pinch of salt and stuff like that, but Rockstar, it's not one of those ones where they just drop news randomly, is it? It's literally one game every 3 years, if you're lucky. 5 years, probably more realistically. I know Bully's not a big title like RDR and GTA, but it's still going to have some development cycle. I mean, Bully was midway through the 360 PS3 era, generation, if I remember correctly. So that's obviously, I imagine it's been planned for a while, and it probably hasn't been in development that long, but I imagine they've been thinking about a sequel for a good while with that. So the Rockstar do stuff right, and they're not rushed into anything either. I know some GTA Online stuff wasn't great at launch, but Rockstar seems to get quite a lot of stuff right, especially single player wise. So I think Bully, if it is the next game, it'll get the respect it deserves from Rockstar, and I think you could probably class Bully as second grade compared to GTA and RDR, but at the same time, it's still going to be done pretty brilliantly, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a cult hit back in the day, and funny, absolutely. It's actually just popped into my head with Bully that I know that Bully, the Xbox 360 version, was made one of the backwards compatible games for the Xbox One. I also think it got a few kind of tweaks and improvements for Xbox One, similar to Red Dead Redemption, but maybe not quite the same level. And it even got like a re-release in a kind of Xbox One box, you know, as some certain select backwards compatible games did, like Red Dead Redemption. So I'd imagine if Rockstar giving it so much love, a future Bully title is likely in the works, so that the rumors probably have some truth to them. But it'll be certainly interesting to see what Rockstar's plans are as they move further forward.
I'm quite looking forward to Bully 2 now, because as you said, cult hero, it was one of my favourite games, and somehow I persuaded my mum to get me that, and I didn't lie to her, I told her what it was. Somehow she still got me it. So cheers for that, mum. but we'll move on to the next story. This kind of links with a story we had last week, wasn't it? Fallout 76, Bethesda's Todd Howard, no cross-console play because Sony is not as helpful as everyone would like. Last week we had the story where Sony seemed a bit more open to it, and that was a backlash from Epic Games and stuff like that, wasn't it? Is it just a bit too soon? I know it probably is easy to do cross-play, but do you think it's just too soon for Fallout 76 to have cross-play with Sony being a bit standoffish, as we said last week?
Honestly, I was very surprised that this was a thing, because like, while we might kind of expect cross-play in kind of free-to-play or smaller titles like Fortnite, and not that Fortnite's small, but it is free-to-play, and Rocket League, you wouldn't really, like, we don't see people really demanding cross-play for their Call of Duties or the Rainbow Six Siege or anything like that. So for like anything in the AAA space. So, although people say they'd preferably like it. So I was kind of surprised to see Todd Howard address this in this way. I thought he'd just kind of dismiss it as not something they were looking into. But I mean, the comments here, which come from an article on Polygon from Ones Good, Todd Howard, while speaking to German publication GameStar about crossplay in 70s, we really love that, but right now we can't. Sony is not as helpful as everyone would like. And you know, it's kind of, maybe this is the catalyst along the way to getting Sony to make some sort of move towards cross-platform, because although we've had Epic and, you know, other companies kind of comment and say, yeah, it's down
I mean, we had that way back when this all started, when Fortnite accidentally enabled crossplay for an evening. You know, it's been clear from the start that Sony are the ones that don't want it. But at the same time, I think Epic and stuff have been a little bit respectful and being kind of like, oh, it's Sony's decision and we respect that. Whereas Todd Howard's just kind of calling Sony right out on it and being like, yeah, Sony aren't being helpful. And I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened with Bethesda. I'm not sure if you remember, but the mods with Fallout, same sort of thing. And I can't remember if it was Todd Howard or Pete Hines at the time, but made comment on it and said it was down to Sony. And I think back then, like, Bethesda got Sony to change their vision on it a little bit. So again, if any kind of third party has the weight to throw around and make Sony have a second thought, it probably is Bethesda for me, among a few others. Like, what do you think, Guy? Do you think this might have some sort of effect on the battle for crossplay?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I mean, Bethesda's obviously a big hitter in the gaming industry, isn't it? So they may not have the power to sway what Sony do, but they probably have the leverage to influence in some way what Sony do. I mean, if they, Bethesda seem to have a more a better relationship with Microsoft, don't they? I mean, Todd Howard was obviously part of the Xbox Scorpio announcement and stuff like that, wasn't he? Bethesda get on Xbox's stage at E3 quite regularly, so they do seem to have a more favourable relationship with Microsoft. So maybe they can sway it, because I'm not saying there's going to be an exclusivity deal with Bethesda or anything like that, but you want Bethesda on your side, and if Bethesda's vision for Fallout 76 and any other future online titles is to have crossplay and have this absolute huge fan world and stuff like that's interlinking, and it doesn't really matter what console you're on. I mean, PC is different, but it doesn't really make a difference in games like in the MMO survival game or whatever it's going to be classed as. It doesn't really make a difference. And I think the most important point, as we said last week, crossplay isn't going to decide what console you're going to be on. It's just kind of annoying fans for the sake of annoying fans, isn't it? I mean, it's just a bit annoying, really. But I think, what if AAA developers start speaking about crossplay? I mean, all it's going to take is for EA to get on it. That control, EA controls casual gamers, doesn't it? And so does Activision. So if Activision and EA start talking about crossplay, and then Sony get a bit bitchy with it, it might cause more problems. But Bethesda's for not hardcore gamers, because I think Skyrim and Oblivion and quite easy to play. Fallout's a bit different, but as soon as casual developers start getting onto crossplay, I think Sony will chirp up a bit more and fall in line.
Hopefully. I mean, it's something that can only benefit the gamers, and I can't really see how it'll hurt Sony too much. I mean, it's not going to be the change in the console wars. I think Nintendo and Xbox will have to do a lot more to win that battle. But you know, it is just, it's something I'd personally like to see sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just something for fans to, it's just more people to play with, isn't it? It's not breaking a boundary of a console, but it's just a different pool of people to play with, and I don't see the problem with that. But we'll move on to the next story. Netflix's new batch of Castlevania episodes arrive in time for Halloween. A bit more, obviously Castlevania is a game and stuff like that, but it's a bit more entertainment sidey. But what, are you a fan of the show and the games?
I am, yeah. I'd be a fan of both. I mean, Castlevania, like, I've always had a love for kind of like vampire related media, and when it comes to video games, Castlevania is the vampire game, and always has been. And this show, I remember when it launched last year, I think there was only like 4 episodes in the original run, and I just watched it, and I just couldn't believe how good it was. Just the pure animation style. It's like a proper nod to 80s animation, but not just Western animation, but also anime from the 80s, like the old anime, like combines the two so brilliantly. Like it's just for the art style alone. Did you watch any of the, have you caught the Castlevania show yourself?
No, I haven't even played the game, if I'm honest. It's not, I know of the franchise in general, but I've never really played the game, and I've never really watched the show. But no, it's not something that's really ever caught my eye or anything like that, is it? What would you class it as? Just an anime? Vampire anime or something like that?
Well, it's I wouldn't really call it an anime, because although it's based on a Japanese game, it very much is a Western animation, but at the same time there are anime influences on it, which, you know, I think is inevitable with it being a Japanese property. But it's fan service, you know, for fans of the game. So I suppose if you haven't really played the games, it's probably not really going to be for you. But for any of our listeners who have played the games, I would recommend this. I think it's like 4 20-minute episodes. Like it's less than an hour and a half of your time. You'll have watched it before you know it. So I'd recommend giving the first 4 episodes a watch on Netflix if you're looking for something to watch.
Yeah, I mean, something in a similar pool. I'm not sure if this is official news yet, but I think the much famed Halo TV series is getting stronger rumours that it's coming on. I think Showtime are getting in the stage of wanting it for next year. I'm not sure if that, it might have been last week's news or something like that, but seems like Halo may be getting a TV series. I mean, this has probably been, what, 10 years of this rumour, but just to fill out the news bit, how much would you be looking forward to an actual Halo TV series?
That really, really depends. I mean, it could be great, because we know Halo is like a rich concept for kind of the screen, like that could go beyond games, but it really depends on kind of who's directing, who's writing, who's on to act. I mean, a lot of, as we know all too well, a lot of gaming adaptations for the screen don't really work out well. So there are some exceptions, but they are few and far between. So I think, as with anything, you know, it comes down to, I'll watch it when it comes out and pass judgment then, you know. It was the same with this Castlevania series when I first heard it. Meh. And I just watched and I was like, that was cool. So I'll have to pin back my expectations on Halo for the minute, but it is cool that it's finally happening after, as you said, what feels like a long time of speculation. I mean, wasn't that once it was supposed to be a movie with Peter Jackson directing or something like that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was meant to be a Gears of War film, a Dead Space film, a Halo film. but yeah, I think Halo's been rumoured to be something for so bloody long, and I think the rumours of Steven Spielberg being either producer or director, so it's good signs if he's involved. But yeah, well, I was just adding that on because it kind of popped in my head. But we'll move on to the last story. Valve quietly blocks new method to estimate Steam sales figures. What can you tell us about this, Carl?
Yeah, so for this one, I'll have to read the story to give us kind of a basis. So this comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. Actually, our last story came from him too. So Tom's really on the ball this week. Head over to Eurogamer to read his those articles from him and many others. But Tom writes, a week ago, indie developer Tyler Glyle suggested a new method to estimate the number of copies a game had sold on Steam. He did so via a Medium blog post, which gathered a fair amount of interest. A week on Steamed reports, onlookers suddenly noticed Glyle's method was no longer working. Valve had quietly taken action to render it useless. At no point had the company commented on Glail's method or explained what and why it was changing its systems to block it. In brief, Glail suggested using the percentage of people who had unlocked a particular achievement to then estimate a game's overall user base. Steam counted achievement percentages to 16 decimal places. Now, however, Steam rounds this up, a change which looks a deliberate move to nip any sales estimated tech in the bud. Developers trying to estimate Steam sales figures because Valve does not disclose them itself. It never has done, but up until recently, most relied on third-party site Steam Spy to gain a general picture of the market and of their own title's success compared to others. Of course, Valve neutered Steam Spy in April as part of a wider move it said was designed to enhance Steam's privacy settings, something linked at the time to GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation. So yeah, I mean, obviously at the time, I actually remember that when Steam Spy was closed down and, you know, Valve said, oh, GDPR, and people were like, oh yeah, you know, that nuisance that is GDPR, and people accepted that. But now it very much does seem like Valve just don't want people being able to estimate Steam sales, which I for one find very odd. I mean, I'm sure this will develop in the next week or so. Maybe people will come up with theories as to why, but what do you think, Guy? Can you think of any plausible reason why Steam wouldn't want to know how many games are kind of titles are being moved on their platform?
I'm not sure. I mean, I could kind of understand if they don't want to make it public knowledge, because you don't want to kill a game before it's had a chance to breathe, kind of. I mean, say if a game's a good game, but a very niche game, it's sold very little. It can kind of be off-putting to new people to that genre of game, or just to the new franchise of game or something like that. So I can kind of understand it, but I don't think it would make that much a difference to see sales figures in public domain. So yeah, it's just a bit pointless and a bit weird news story for me. I don't think it makes too much of a difference either way, but I mean, if they want to keep stuff private, feel free. It's just weird. I mean, it is quite interesting data and stuff like that. I mean, it's always interesting to see how many games have sold. I mean, I think they mostly use it for films and stuff like that when you see how much they've made money wise, don't you? I don't really check that stuff with games. I mean, it is interesting to see how much money a game makes, but I only really check that with films. So maybe more hardcore gamers compared to me are more interested in it. But it's just a bit much of a nothing story for me.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand your stance on it. I think overall, obviously, figures like these are going to be more for developers and publishers,
yeah,
than actual gamers. But you know, sometimes it is kind of nice just to get an idea of how a game fares commercially compared to critically, because you know, there has been games, mm-hmm, in the past that get 8s and 9s out of 10s, but then we never really see a sequel because they simply don't sell enough. So it's only really sales figures that we do get to see that, like. But it just seemed an odd move when Steam, because they always seemed, at least in terms of allowing third parties to kind of estimate figures, they used to seem a little more open to it in the past. But now, you know, more recent, and maybe it's because PC's fallen behind mobile as the top gaming platform. I don't know, not sure why that really matters, but for whatever reason, anyway, they just seem to be a little more tight-lipped in recent months with these two stories here. But yeah, maybe again, people will come up with their own theories in the next coming week. So I'll keep an eye out on that. And maybe we might have a reason to go back to this one in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, absolutely. But that is the end of the news, Carl. So you know what time it is now. It's top 10 time. So, number 10. We're gonna do reverse order like we did last week. So,
yeah, I'm prepared for that.
Go on then. What's your number 10?
Okay, so growing up, throughout my childhood and into my teens, WWF, as I still like to refer to it as, was a big, big part in terms of my entertainment. And obviously that included the video games. And, you know, over the years, I remember it started with, I think it was just called WWF Wrestling on the Commodore 64, and onto the likes of In Your House and WrestleMania on the Mega Drive and the SNES. And then obviously as time went on, we moved on to the PS1. And like, I remember I had Warzone, and I had a kind of long-term loan of Attitude, and they were decent games, but you know, looking back, I was looking at the review scores for them today, and they did all right. But, you know, I think that was just because comparatively they were the best that had been on the platform, but that didn't mean they were great games. And I remember going to a cousin's house and playing WrestleMania on the N64, and I was jealous. I was like, this is the first great wrestling game I've ever played. Like, why don't I have this for my console? And then I went to a cousin's house and I played SmackDown, and I was like, here we are, finally. Finally, and every time I go to his cousin's house, I just play SmackDown the whole time I was there. And then I'd go home and I'd be like, why don't I have SmackDown? And then one day my brother brought home SmackDown 2, Know Your Role. And I was like, this is just the peak of wrestling games. I mean, I played that game religiously, you know, playing against my friends, playing Absolutely. The season mode. It had the best season mode, and they've never done a better season mode. I mean, this had a co-op season mode with proper stories, proper, you know, it was just amazing. I remember my brother and I had our creator wrestlers, and we had like a co-op season going, and we were tag team champions. He was the WWF champion. I was the Intercontinental champion. And then I said, I want to shake things up. So I went in the roster mode, and I put my character in a white shirt with black tie, and I added them to the Right to Censor faction. And then we went back into our season, and suddenly my brother and I were in like a grudge match fighting for his title. I mean, like, just as a wrestling fan at the time, there was nothing better than SmackDown 2 Know Your Role. And unfortunately, like, although, you know, Just Bring It, Here Comes the Pain. What was the one in between?
It was Just Bring It, wasn't it?
Just Bring It was 3. Here Comes the Pain was 5, I think. So it was 4. Whatever. Anyway, 4. All of them brilliant games, and they definitely improved mechanically and stuff. But the season mode, unfortunately, just got like watered down more and more and more. And like, it's gone to the point now where I still, there's friends who buy them, and I still like the odd drunken night to have a go with them. But still, you know, SmackDown 2, Know Your Role will always be the peak of wrestling games for me. And for that, it deserves a place in my top 10. But it does. And that starts me off there. So the best wrestling game of all time, in my opinion, SmackDown 2, Know Your Role.
Shut Your Face was before Here Comes the Pain. But I fully understand this. I mean, I still watch it now. I obviously do the PWI stuff on the channel as well. But no, I fully understand that. I actually can't remember which one it was. It might be the one you're on about. It's where the story mode, you could actually run around the back, and then you just talk to people, and then it always seemed to be Undertaker for me. He just comes out and gets in your face, like, back off. But there was one where you could run around the back, and it was kind of, not, I'm going to say RPG elements, but it really wasn't. But just having that thing where you could actually kind of make your own choices, I kind of love that. But no, I fully understand the wrestling stuff, and I fully agree. The PS1 and PS2 era games were so much better than the ones that are out and about now. And they just don't seem to...
I'm right there originally.
Yeah, they just don't seem to recapture that magic. It might be the fact that we're older and stuff like that, but they just don't seem to be that fun and just a bit overcomplicated. Shite now. But yeah, that top 10, it's certainly interesting. But number 9, Carl.
And again, this one links to one of my loves from kind of media and entertainment in general. And that is Spider-Man on the PS2, which was the movie tie-in. Yes, a licensed game makes my top 10. Shock horror. I mean, Spider-Man 2 was probably critically better than Spider-Man. And obviously, I'm hoping the upcoming Spider-Man game will be even better yet. But for me, Spider-Man was the one that I got into, like that I played the most. It was the first great Spider-Man game I played. People are probably going to say, what about Spider-Man 1 on the PS1? I didn't actually play that till after. It was a great Spider-Man game as well. So covering my bases there. But like, I remember getting this game so well. I remember to browse as often I did, but I never actually expected to get anything. But my mom was like, pick a game. And then I picked out Spider-Man, and then she pointed out, and I was like, yeah, but I prefer Spider-Man. She's like, get both. And I was like, great. So I brought the two games back, played Spider-Man, and was like hooked. But I was like, maybe Men in Black would be good too. Put Men in Black in. Game is god awful. Men in Black never got played again. Traded it in. But Spider-Man was amazing. I mean, the traversing around the city, web slinging, is like the first game where I was able to do that in a Spider-Man game. The combat, which, you know, people always praise Arkham games for their combat, but people forget these Spider-Man movie tie-ins inspired that combat system, you know, which worked well for Spider-Man. The whole indicator over your head as to the enemies and certain enemies not being able to block their attacks or whatever, that all came from these movie tie-in games. I mean, they are partly responsible for the Arkham games that everyone loves. So, I mean, people need to give Treyarch their credit. You know, Treyarch, now known obviously for making Call of Duty games, they once made some awesome Spider-Man games, of which this was the first. So this is my favorite superhero game of all time. Did you actually play this Spider-Man game back in the PS2 era, Guy?
Oh God, yes, absolutely. I mean, if I didn't love the Arkham, well, first two, I'll say a trilogy, but the first two were the better two. If I didn't love them two games that much, I'd be right there with you saying that this is the best superhero game ever. I mean, back then you had disappointing Batman games. I mean, that horrendous Nintendo Superman game, which was a bit before my time, but it's still well known.
But, yeah, very much.
Spider-Man seemed to be the pioneering hero, superhero franchise in terms of video games, and we now see the success of the Arkham franchise, and now we're going to see the rejigged Spider-Man franchise on PS4 later this year. But no, I mean, the first Spider-Man 1 and 2, as you said, the both games were excellent. I mean, just the open world, as you said, web slinging. It seems like such a simple idea, but back in PS2, that the idea of just an open world where you could just swing about, it seems ahead of its time, even though it's a simple idea. But back then you didn't get games that were that open and that kind of limitless in terms of having a superhero character. So I'm right there with you. This was the pioneer of the superhero franchise in terms of gaming. So no, it's a very deserving part on anyone's list. And yeah, as I said, if it wasn't for Arkham, I mean, I could see this being on my backup list. But yeah, excellent choice. It's probably one of my favourite games as a kid. So, number 8.
Okay, with number 8, we have what, you know, if I just switch off my kind of personal opinions for a moment and just switch on kind of a critical view, number 8 is arguably the best game I've ever played critically. I mean, it's almost faultless, but just, you know, other factors kind of influence, you know, favorites, as we all know. But this, I am, of course, speaking of The Last of Us on PS3. I mean, as I said, I think twice on podcast now, this was the reason I bought a PS3. I went out and bought a PS3 and bought this game when it came out because I wanted to play it so badly. Like, I'd watched it at a couple of E3s and some other shows, and I was just blown away. Like, graphically, this was better than anything I'd ever seen. The gameplay looked
amazing. And it really is story, gameplay, graphics. It has it all. And like, I'm not going to spend too much time on this game because I waxed lyrical on my debut on the podcast about this game. But I mean, for anyone who hasn't played it, including you, Guy, I say again, play this game. I mean, you just, it's a life changing experience for any gamer to play this game. Like, it's just that good. Like, I mean, it's a masterpiece from Naughty Dog. They are true artists when it comes to game development, and this is their masterpiece thus far.
Yeah, I can only go on its reputation as you pinted that I haven't played it. But no, I mean, everyone who's played this has got me for having not played it, so that can only speak volumes. I mean, I've given Uncharted a go, I give Horizon Zero Dawn a go, so it would probably only be fair if I give Last of Us a go. One day, as I said, it'll be Spider-Man that makes me dust off the PlayStation, but maybe when it's dusted off, it may start to breathe a bit more. And my mate is, I am eventually going to get God of War off my mate, so that might do it as well. But yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to comment, but just going off its reputation, I mean, I imagine people will be probably complaining it's not higher up, if I'm honest. But no, I think anyone's top 10 will probably have Last of Us in it if they have played it. So yeah, fair dudes. What are we up to? Number seven.
This will be one game that some people, listeners, might be thinking, what the hell's that? And then other listeners who know what it is might be wondering why I included it in my top 10, because it's a little controversial. But that is Grandia 2 on the PlayStation 2. Now, for those unfamiliar, Grandia 2 was an action RPG, Japanese RPG to be more specific, that came out on PlayStation 2. It was a sequel to Grandia, which was released on the PlayStation 1. Now, I hadn't actually played the first game at the time I played this, but heard of it from a friend of mine who had a more extensive knowledge of the genre at the time. And for me, I think it was the first kind of proper, this kind of squad team based action RPG that I'd actually played. So it hooked me straight away, because it was a nice change of pace from the kind of turn-based Japanese RPGs that I'd been used to kind of on the PS1. Now, the reason why it might be kind of a controversial pick is, one, to most people, it's kind of a mid-tier RPG. And then secondly, because I've included the PS2 version when most people say the Dreamcast version is the superior version because of better loading times, but I never actually played the Dreamcast version, so I'll have to just take their word on it. But I don't know what it was about this game, but I think it's just, you know, the gameplay made a difference, you know, it being kind of in real time, well, more so real time. There is like an action bar, but you know, that to me that was new. And then there was the characters were cool. I loved the art style, and I mean the story, and like for me this had one of the character deaths. People talk about like Aerith and Final Fantasy VII. Spoilers, sorry, but the game's like 20 odd years old, you know, if you haven't played it now you're probably not going to. Exactly. But this game also had a character that kind of dies sacrificing himself to save the team, and I was just like, no, I didn't want him to die, and I just couldn't believe that he died. And like, I just loved this game. I mean, it just had everything for me that I like in a JRPG. And like, I think I played it back to back. Like, I finished it, and I was so kind of, you know, when you finish a game you love and then you're kind of disappointed it's over, and that with this one I was just like, screw it, I'll play it again. So I mean, I've probably finished this game 3 or 4 times, and I probably will finish it again, because I think it's is it on PS, I'm pretty sure it's on PS4 as a PlayStation 2 classic, so I'll probably play it again. I mean, I love this game, and that's why it's one of those games where I understand why it wouldn't be on most people's top 10s, but it deserves a spot on my top 10 personally.
I've never even heard of the game. I can't even find it on Google. you're going to have to send me a link to that for me to check it out. But it sounds like a very personal experience. I mean, this is what the entire list's about. I mean, similarly to my Army of Two show last week, I mean, any personal experience, it can justify any game. And, yeah, fair dues. So I'm going to have to move on quickly to six because I don't know what else to talk about on that one. But number six.
Yeah, number six. Again, it like a lot of my games on my list, it kind of ties in entertainment interest in general. Gator 4 on the PlayStation 2. And just, you know, like many people at my age group, like we all kind of got obsessed with skateboarding, whether we were good at it or not. I was unfortunately not good at it. Did not have the balance or the kind of reflexes for skateboarding. I tried. But nonetheless, I loved watching skateboarding. I loved all the kind of media relating to skateboarding, you know, Jackass and all that kind of stuff. And I loved the music. I loved rock music, which obviously tied a lot into kind of skateboarding. A lot of the bands and stuff were closely related with it. So for me, like a skateboarding video game was always going to be a hit. And I remember my start with the Tony Hawk series would have been with like, 2, I think, and 3 on the PS1 at a certain friend's, and then 3 on the PS2 at another friend's, which was a massive kind of leap because the PlayStation 2 was just so much better. But then I remember one Christmas I went shopping for games after Christmas, as I often did, and this was the one game I had in mind that I tunnel vision on. I have to get that game. Went in, got it, brought it home, and I just played it. I literally don't think I took it out of my PlayStation for about 3 weeks at least. I mean, I was that obsessed with the game. Like I was really good at Tony Hawk's. I wasn't the best. You know, I have a friend who, you know, one day I'd love to get him on the podcast actually, but he was better than me, unfortunately. But I was better than everyone else. I mean, my friends that were actual good skaters that I'd first played Tony Hawk's at their houses, I could destroy them with my one hand behind my back. Could put me on a real skateboard and they'd put me to shame. But, you know, on the PlayStation, I was like Tony Hawk himself. You know, I was just that good. But yeah, like just this will always be to me my favorite skateboarding game of all time. And there's been some great ones since, other Tony Hawk's games. The Skate series is brilliant, but just for me, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 was the first one that kind of did what was required, like bringing in the systems that it did and the music, like the soundtrack, like just so many iconic songs like that I love to this day. Like, so that's why this game is in my top 10. Were you a fan of the Tony Hawk series, Guy?
Oh God. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we mentioned it with Pokemon last week. I think anyone in our age group grew up with Tony Hawk games, didn't they? It's kind of similar to Pokemon, where anyone mid-20s-ish it had that, and Tony Hawk's definitely the same as that. I can't remember the ones I had. I'm crap with names, especially when I was a kid, but Tony Hawk games were bloody brilliant. And I mean, you mentioned the Jackass influence there. I mean, I think Bam Margera was in one of the later ones that I probably remember more clearly, where you had to pick between him and Tony Hawk, and that's probably the one I remember more clearly. But no, Tony Hawk games were bloody brilliant. I mean, looking back now, if a 24-year-old me thinking, why was I obsessed with a skateboard game back then? You'd think it'd be absolutely nonsense. Because I was like you, I couldn't skate for shit. I had fucking rollerblades or some shit, which I was crap at as well. I just wanted to tag along. I couldn't skate for any. I had skateboards and stuff like that, but it was literally, I can push it about 10 feet without falling over. But no, I was a chubby kid on rollerblades. Went to a skate park and I was like, screw this, I'm going to slush puppy. but no, yeah, it's hard to explain to someone who's never experienced the Tony Hawk or the skateboarding fad. It really is hard to explain, because it sounds so shit, but it was so brilliant. And to make actual, like, storied missions out of a skateboard game, it's like, do so many tricks, get so many photos, tag so many cars or something like that. It was like, this is the best game ever and it's absolute all nonsense. And I can fully understand why this is on your top 10, because they were just so fun. Just absolute brilliant games. But what are we up to? Number 5?
Yeah, so we're into our top 5 now. This was the order I probably swapped around multiple times, but I'm happy with what I have now. So number 5, again, a game that some people might not have heard of, but those who have definitely won't question its inclusion. And that is Suikoden 2 on the PlayStation 1. This is another JRPG. It is a PlayStation, as I said, PlayStation 1 title. And just a little tidbit here. This is the most expensive game I own. I paid about 200 quid for this game. It's probably worth more now. I mean, collectors might be able to correct me, but I'm pretty sure it is the, if not one of the rarest PAL PlayStation 1 games there is. Like it's really solid, but I was happy to pay it because it's such an iconic game that I wanted to have a kind of a hard copy of it. For those that don't want to pay 200 or more quid for it, it's also available on the PlayStation 3 as like a PS1 classic. So, check it out. But Suikoden 2, like, it's just amazing. It's the sequel to Suikoden 1, obviously, which came out, I think, only about a year beforehand. And they're both brilliant games, to be honest. And, but 2 just kind of built on everything 1 had. I mean, you've got basically, the premise of Suikoden is it's based on, but loosely adapted from the Suikoden books, which, are kind of ridiculously old Chinese books, I think, that deal with like a story of like, is it 101 heroes? You know, I'm killing myself here, but, I used to know all this, but, it's a ridiculous amount of heroes anyway. So in each of the games, you have a similar amount of recruitable characters. Now they're not all playable, but they do things like in each of the games, you have like a castle or a base, and they'll open stores, inns, that kind of thing. 108. It's the 108 Stars of Destiny. So that's there's 108 characters. And yeah, like it's just that, but there are a ridiculous amount of characters. You know, in a Final Fantasy, you might have 7 or 8 playable characters. Mm. That, you know, Sue could have like 40, 50 playable characters. Like it's, and all the kind of crazy, you know, you can get like wolves, dragons, griffins, all this weird stuff, as well as humans and whatnot. And just the story of Suikoden, the story of two best friends ending up on the opposite side of a war and battling against each other. And I mean, it's a great story. Just the amount of characters and the gameplay. Like, I mean, you have your regular turn-based kind of small team battles that make up the guts of the game, but you've also got these little mini strategy battles which are almost like an RTS, and then you've also got these kind of rock paper scissors style duel battles. So it's got like 3 battle systems in the one game, which I thought was really cool at shaking things up, whereas another turn-based RPGs at the time, it's just kind of rinse and repeat the same battle system over and over again, which could have got a little tiresome at time. So that's why I'd personally have like a Suikoden on my list over like a Final Fantasy or a, you know, something more kind of mainstream. But I mean, it is certainly a game that anyone who hasn't played it, who likes JRPGs, get on your and has a PlayStation 3 or indeed a PSP or Vita, get on them and download it. It'll probably cost you like £3 or £4, I'd imagine. And it's well worth the time. Have you ever heard of this game, Guy?
Nope. Never heard of it. I mean, the fact you've spent 200 quid on a hard copy, it speaks volumes of your love of the game, really. I mean, anything that was, did you say PS1 or PS2 era?
PS1.
PS1 era, and you're talking about a stupid amount of characters that are involved that you can play as, that you can combine with or whatever. It sounds like one of them games that was well ahead of its time, and I think that's what separates a good game and a great game. If it's ahead of its time, it's almost timeless. Where if it's a good game at the time, it'll soon be forgotten. So yeah, it does sound really good. And I mean, if you're putting it ahead of games like Final Fantasy VII, which is probably the biggest JRPG I played as a kid, it just speaks volume, because Final Fantasy is probably the biggest franchise from Japan, off the top of my head. But yeah, it sounds really good to me. I'll have to check out a bit more in detail.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to that one as well. I mean, like, just the last line on it, just to say that, like, while, you know, usually people are moaning about Konami, it's all Metal Gear Solid and Castlevania and how they're ruining those series. You know, my best mate and I are always just saying, like, Suikoden, like, we haven't had a Suikoden since the PS2 era. Like, it's been that long, like, and there was so much more to come from that series. Like, so that's a series I'd like Konami to sell off, but they probably never will, unfortunately.
Bastards.
Yeah. Fuck Konami.
Yeah. They go under and then someone will make it. But, yeah, what are we up to? 4, I think we're up to?
Yeah, so 4, and this is a game that, you know, I feel it should feel unfortunate missing out on the top 3, but, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it goes. And this is the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim on the Xbox 360. Obviously, we talked a lot about Oblivion last week in your top 10, and I was surprised that Skyrim, you know, wasn't got the nod. You know, it is close, but for me, just like, you know, for me, it just simply came into which game hooked me more. Like, I loved Oblivion, and I played a good 60-70 hours and really enjoyed that 60-70 hours, but with Skyrim, I probably played 3 times that amount of time into it. Like, that's really how much Skyrim. I know Skyrim is probably a slightly larger game, but at the same time, I mean, 200 hours plus, I don't think, you know, The Witcher 170 hours, Dragon Age Inquisition 160 hours. But this, we're talking 210 hours I put into this game. Like, it's insane. Like, so, I mean, that speaks volumes for me. Like, what can I say about Skyrim that hasn't already been said? It's just the world that, you know, getting to be the Dragonborn. And I know some people complain the game can be a little bit too easy and, you know, you can become a bit of a god in it, but that's what being the Dragonborn's all about. Like, and I love, this game, and I just think, you know, that not the story itself is in the main story, because I think from Oblivion to Skyrim, they sort of tossed the story aside a little bit. They more kind of focused on kind of the side quest stories and the guild stories. Not that they were awesome in Oblivion as well, but I mean, I could just walk into this world and be like, yeah, right, yeah, dragons, yeah, don't care. I'm just going to go off and explore, and I'm going to go to every place on the map and see what's happening and, you know, kill these Daedric worshippers over here and these thieves over there.
200 hours later, you forgot there's actually a quest.
Exactly. Like, it literally is like that. 150 hours in, I'm like, what was I supposed to do in the story? I was like, oh, I'm supposed to go up this mountain and talk to this dragon guy. You know, like, it's just,
you have to go back to the first town. It's like, oh, I've been there since the start of the game.
Exactly, like, and I was only, funny enough, I was watching a documentary on the series on YouTube yesterday, and this kind of was almost from a negative angle, where this was a guy who'd started with the old games, you know, Arena and Daggerfall, and although, like, he praised the newer games, he said it's a shame that they stepped away from their kind of you're in control of everything that happens, and they kind of made it a little more, not linear seems the wrong word for, because none of these games are linear, but a little less open in terms of choice. But, you know, obviously, you know, I jumped on at Oblivion, so I never really experienced those older, more open games. But for me, Skyrim is plenty open. And like, this game launching was an event. I remember waiting in my local store at the time for the game to come in, because I knew the clerk, my friend and I, we were friendly with the clerk, like, got him well with him. And we like stood over there talking to him, just waiting for the game to come in. Then we took it back to my house, had 2 TVs in the same room, and just played for hours without even talking to each other for hours on end at times, you know, like, it was
that much of an event. I mean, I literally, again, this was just, as I said, 210 hours. Like that says enough why this game is in my top 10, and why it is, why everyone rates it so highly. Like, and obviously I don't have to ask you too much on this guy because I know how much you love the Elder Scrolls. But like, what was your personal opinion on Skyrim and why maybe did it slightly miss out on your top 10 behind Oblivion?
Well, if we didn't put in the rule that you could, that is only going to be one per franchise, I think my top two would probably be Oblivion then Skyrim. So I think that sums why how much I love Skyrim as well. But yeah, Skyrim was just it's just special, and I think I mentioned it in the last game where if it's ahead of its time and it's just endless hours of fun, it's always going to have a place in someone's heart, and Skyrim. So it sure as hell does have that. As you said, it's just special. I mean, the main story isn't the best, but it doesn't have to be. Bethesda games are all about the world. I mean, I think we've seen this trend in Fallout games as well as the Elder Scrolls series. The main quest, I'm not going to say it's shit, but it's not the centerpiece anymore. It's just about exploring. I mean, the guilds. I prefer the Oblivion guilds. That's probably why it got the nod. In terms of the place on the top 10. But no, I mean the Fighters Guild, Dark Brotherhood, Thieves Guild, Fighters Guild or Companions was in Skyrim. I think it was. They're just excellent and just add so much in terms of story, in terms of lore, in terms of everything. And it's just how little things tweak. And I think another thing that added it for Oblivion, I'm not trying to put Skyrim down, it's just the DLC on Oblivion seemed to add a bit more for me. The Shivering Isles was special.
I will give you that. Shivering Isles is probably arguably the best DLC for any game that I've ever played.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas with Skyrim, they added in Dawnbreaker with the vampires and stuff, which kind of, it was good, but it was kind of annoying, because then random people started getting murdered in the street by vampires.
That was awesome. It did add some challenge, though. Become a vampire, and then anyone who has fire spells can fuck you up.
That's true.
But
I always preferred being a werewolf. That was the thing.
Morrowind, wasn't it?
Yeah, Morrowind was... I was a kid looking for a werewolf for hours on that game. But no, I mean, Elder Scrolls on the whole, it's my favourite franchise going. But Skyrim, yeah, I mean, I could load up my Xbox now, jump into wherever I was on my last load, and just be like, yep, crack on. Don't have to start a new... Do you know on other RPGs where you just go, I'm going to start a new game because I lost where I was? Elder Scrolls games, it is literally, you're in the game. It's so easy. It's so perfect for what it is. And that's why I think it separates it from other RPG games. Just an ease of access sounds boring, but I think it's the perfect way of putting it. It's just so perfect to just go on a wander and get back into it. It's just brilliant. But
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, we should do if they ever, once the Starfield and all that comes out for Bethesda or for Fallout 76, we'll do a special pod on them or something. But top three.
Yeah, so just before I go into my top three, just like you did last week, I'm going to run down quickly through some honourable mentions. First off, we have Final Fantasy VIII. Yes, 8, not 7, not 6. 6 probably the best critically to me, and 7 probably the most popular.
But I was 9.
9 is another shout for the best critically, actually, alongside 6. But yeah, 8, I was addicted to cards. I really liked the characters, and to hell with people's criticism of the limit to the draw system. I loved being overpowered. Wild Arms, another PS1 JRPG, just awesome. I mean, anyone who hasn't played this, again, it's a PlayStation classic on the PS3, PSP, Vita. So if you have one of those and you haven't played it, give it a try. It's just great. The character's amazing. It's cool world, everything. Command & Conquer Tiberium Sun on the PC. A lot of people would be like, if you're a Command & Conquer fan, why not a Red Alert game? Tiberium Sun is the ultimate Command & Conquer for me. It had to be one of the ones from the original series involving Kane. I just love Kane. He's so cheesy and awesome. And just, I love the units and the story in Tiberium Sun. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, PS2. For me, a Diablo clone that's actually better than Diablo, or at least it was more fun for me. This is the game I've probably completed more than any other game. Like, I've finished this game a ridiculous amount of times, like on all the difficulties. You know, it's just a brilliant co-op kind of dungeon crawler game. Just awesome. I'd love to see it re-released on a more recent platform. Check it out if you're a fan of more retro games and you haven't played it before. Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. People be surprised, not one, not two. I've gone with three. I just thought three was the game, the one I got the most enveloped into. It was the first one I finished on my own. I mean, I finished one with my older brothers, but three was the first one I finished personally. I just love that game. The fact there's a character that can die from old age, you know, like, can't beat that. Devil May Cry, PS2, just, oh my god, like the progenitor of kind of its own kind of subgenre of action games, and just, there's a reason why it started a subgenre. It's just amazing. I love that whole setting. As I alluded to earlier, I love the kind of Castlevania kind of vampire, darky kind of demonic stuff, and Devil May Cry is that, and it's just, Dante is one of the best protagonists ever. I don't know why they keep trying to make Nero a thing. Just give me a game where you're just Dante again. That's what I want. Marvel vs. Capcom 2. I'm not a big fighter fan, but I have always kind of liked the Street Fighter games, and as is clear, I love Marvel. I remember first playing, I used to play X-Men versus Street Fighter at a friend's house. That's kind of where my love of the series started. And for me, Marvel versus Capcom 2 was the high point of the series. I mean, it's just a brilliant arcade fighter where you could play as like Street Fighter characters and like Marvel superheroes. Just what else could you want? Next we have Pro Evo 6, best football game ever. To hell with FIFA. This is true. I will not be moved on my opinion on this, you know, and I don't know with this. We're on a football podcast channel. Like, I don't need to tell you why this game is the best. Halo 3, obviously an entry in your top 10. So we talked about last week. I won't say why, but I already said why back then. Why then? It's one of the best shooters there is. Mass Effect 2, again, an entry from your list. So, again, I have already said why I love this game, but it's just, it's an amazing RPG. And, you know, I played it back to back at the time. Like, and then lastly, we have Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Vegas, which just was a game I was absolutely addicted to. And I was awesome at, and just cause I played it so much. So they're honorable mentions. It was so hard not to include some of them, but you know, at least I've gotten to mention them. So, now we get into where the big dogs, the top three here, which was painstaking to choose. But first we have BioShock on the Xbox 360.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And I think I kind of gave away that this was going to be on my list. I couldn't. I mean, wow. Like, Rapture is just one of the best game worlds ever. I mean, like, just the writing in this game is, like, I really appreciate good writing in a video game. Some people seem to suggest, and that's fair dues, it's their opinion that, like, writing isn't as important in a game. It's all about gameplay. But for me, just writing is just, can be so important in a game. And, like, BioShock is a game that you, like, and I remember when I first played it at a friend's, I was kind of dismissive. And I was kind of like, nah, where's the hype on this? I don't know. But, you know, but you can't really get BioShock in 20 minutes. But, like, when my friend insisted I borrow it and I took it home and I played it and I was hooked straight away. I mean, the atmosphere in that game, like, you literally walking around corners, like, literally shitting yourself because, like, before you know it, there can be a splicer behind you and, you know, it's just, it's so scary, that game. But, like, just pure atmosphere, like, it's crazy. And the gameplay as well, not to knock the gameplay, like, its gameplay is top class as well. Like, it's a proper challenge. And, you know, I won't go too much more into it because we did talk a lot about the BioShock series as a whole last week because of your inclusion of Infinite. But, I mean, it is an excellent, excellent game. And it is one of those games, along with the Last of Us, that is one of the critical masterpieces, a pure piece of art in terms of game development. And anyone who hasn't played it, go and play it. The collection, which is awesome, one of the best collections ever released on like PS4 and Xbox One, is there. And the games are all kind of up-resed, improved, and they look amazing. And yeah, play that game. I'm sure you'll probably get on Amazon for like 15 quid or something. So play that game for sure. But I don't want to go too much more.
Yeah, I can only echo what you said. BioShock 1, and I put Infinite in mind because I was a bit more of age for it, but BioShock 1 was absolutely brilliant. And I mean, as you said, Rapture's probably one of the best in-game settings ever. It's just such a beautifully created world, and I can't remember the villain's name, but you know what saying I'm going to go on with the golf club. Good God, he got fucked up.
Would you kindly?
Yeah.
Because and then he gets his head bashed in. It is, why can't I remember this now? It's Andrew. This is killing me now. I do really know. I remember for years, Andrew Ryan, my friend had his speech as his kind of bio on Xbox for like the best part of our entire time Xbox. I mean, his quotes are just amazing. Again, that comes down to the writing. It's just crazy how good the writing is in that game. And I pray we get, someday we get another BioShock game. Not necessarily another game in Rapture, because I think that's done. Like, I enjoyed BioShock 2 more than most. I think Rapture's been well explored, but another world, you know, we know they're capable of creating, you know, interesting worlds. And I just love a BioShock 3 or a BioShock, whatever you want to call it. I would,
even if it was Infinite 2, So yeah. That world could be further explored. But
They could do anything
with that series, and it'd sell well. I mean, I've just loaded up The Infinite. It's got 10 out of 10 on Steam and 94% on Metacritic. I mean, good God. But yeah, I mean, what are we up to? Number two?
Yeah, so next, another game that we covered last week with your list, which is Gears of War on the Xbox 360. Ooh. You know, as I said at the time, that was the reason I bought an Xbox 360. I abandoned all plans to save for PS3 and bought an Xbox 360 after playing Gears of War at a family friend's house. I mean, I literally, I pulled an all-nighter playing Gears of War. I was just so hooked on this game. And like, I remember, I first convinced a friend to pick up an Xbox in Gears of War. And he watched videos online. He was like, yeah, I will. He went out and bought it. And I remember standing in his driveway waiting for him and his mom to arrive back with the game and the console so we could go in and play it. And we pulled an all-nighter finishing the campaign, and we went straight into the multiplayer. And like, oh my God, like this game, like I completed the campaign. Like I was the guy. Because actually my friend and I, we found all the cog tags without using a guide.
Oh,
so
God.
I was the guy that, like, when I was in clans and stuff at the time, and we'd play so much Gears of War online, and people would be like, I've never finished the campaign. And then people would just say, oh, Carl loves finishing the campaign. Go play with him. And I'd be like, all right. And then I'd take them through the campaign on insane difficulty and pick up all the cog tags. Because by that point, I just knew where they were all off by heart. I'd be like, shoot there, pick it up, shoot there, pick it up. Like, I loved this game, and the multiplayer again, like, it was amazing. Like, I used to take part in tournaments and leagues and, like, all through the Gears of War series, but largely with Gears of War 1. Like, I was obsessed with Gears. And, you know, again, I know all too well from last week that you were very much the same guy.
Yeah, it's a special franchise. I mean, last week we talked about the trailer / advert being the best ever, but in terms of the game, it must be one of the top third person shooters ever, if not the best ever. I mean, there's nothing screaming out at me saying you're a moron because I'm saying this, but Gears of War must be the best third person shooter I can think of.
Yeah, you know. I can't really think of anyone, yeah. Anything even to contend with it. Like, it just, like, I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And you know what's better, actually? My copy of the game, I got for free.
Like, always makes it better.
Yeah, I bought, like, my Xbox 360, I think it came bundled with Call of Duty 3, and my cousin's manager at the time in the shop he worked in, because that's where I bought it, threw in a pre-owned copy of Gears of War 1 for free. He was like, hey, you can have that for free. It was awesome. So you can't go better. One of your my second favorite game of all time, and it was absolutely free. Doesn't get much better than that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, my love for Gears of War, it's well known, as I said on the last pod. It's brilliant. It's the second biggest Xbox franchise for me. Yeah, it's a freaking awesome game. But it's time, Carl. Number one.
Drum roll, please.
Drum roll.
Yeah. So my number one favorite game of all time is Mario Kart Double Dash on the GameCube.
Oh God.
Now, it's funny that I say this, because for years people ask me what my favorite game is, and I'd say Super Mario Kart on the SNES. But when I went to do this list and I thought about it, and I was like, that's not really true. I mean, I love that game too, and I did spend hours upon hours upon hours playing that game. It is definitely my favorite games. But Double Dash had, I wouldn't say everything I loved, because it doesn't have the balloon mode. That's the one little mark you can put against Double Dash. But with that said, it speaks volumes for how much it's racing more than makes up for the lack of a battle mode. Like, it's just Double Dash is absolutely amazing. It is the best multiplayer game of all time for me. And as a person who's primarily a single game player for most time I have been, for me to place, you know,
entirely multiplayer game top of my list, like, speaks volumes for this game. Like, I was absolutely addicted to this game. Like, I would play it religiously, and it is probably the only multiplayer game I can safely say I was the best at. You know, like I'm not a great gamer. Like, I'm average, but at Mario Kart, I could beat, you know, any of my friends out of any of my family. Like, I was, like, friends and family would team up into duos to even be able to nick a race off me, but then try and nick a Grand Prix off me, no chance. Like, I'd come back and I'd get the points to finish on top. Like, I absolutely adored Mario Kart Double Dash, and I just love it to be re-released on the Switch. Like, I don't need any improvements or anything. I just want Double Dash on the Switch.
Yeah, number one's obviously really personal, but I can't stand Mario Kart. I'm shit at it, and I don't like games that I'm shit at. And strangely enough, I don't think I've ever actually played a GameCube, so I've never actually played this one. But I'm awful at Mario Kart, so I try to stay away from it, or I throw a little bit shit and get angry at it. But yeah, I'm sorry to kind of piss on the chips there, but I can understand why Mario Kart's number one. I'm just a game that infuriates me.
I have met a few people who don't like it, and funny enough, they say the same thing, that they're just not particularly good at it, and that's why it frustrates them. And I can get that. Like, do you have a kart racer that you'd prefer, just out of interest?
Oh, it's got to be Crash Bandicoot Tag Team Racing. I think I mentioned, I can't remember if I ever mentioned it at the start of the show or before we even started.
You did mention it earlier. You were saying that it popped up in the WhatsApp. There are a lot of people who say that. I know Tim Getty's off kind of funny. He waxes lyrical about that game and how it's better than Mario Kart. I've played it, you know, a little bit. I wouldn't agree, but it's definitely a good kart racer. It's definitely a good Mario Kart clone. But and there are some others. I know those more recent Sonic ones are supposed to be really good. But for me, Double Dash always will be the ultimate kart racer. And again, that might be slightly biased due to me just being very good at the game, but it's just brilliant. But to be honest, you can't go wrong with any Mario Kart. They're all good, really good kart racers. Like, I don't need to tell anyone that, they know that. That rounds out my top 10, along with those, that silly amount of honorable mentions that I threw in. But I'm happy with my list. I think it gives a good idea of what I'm all about as a gamer. So that's me, and we've had you, and now I hope the listeners kind of have a better idea of what we're into. And I find, like, between us, you know, we seem to cover a lot of different genres and stuff, which probably bodes well forward. So
you can do all the Japanese stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And if, you know, if we ever have anything, yeah, I've people that could guest for sure that could help with those things. But but hopefully now the listeners have kind of a better idea of what we're into, game wise. Actually, and speaking of that, before we finish up, Guy, I know you'll be wary of time, but we didn't get a chance last week, so I want to dip into it before, we finish. What have you been playing lately? I'm curious to know.
Oh, God. Pretty much Fortnite, but I'm starting to go off that a bit because, don't know, just people seem to be getting better, stupidly good at it, and it's getting a bit annoying. But I've recently gone back on Jurassic World Evolution, the park builder game. I got it for 50 quid. It's not worth 50 quid. Honourable mention from last week, Jurassic Park Operation Genesis. It's basically the same game. It's a park builder game, but that was one of my favourite games from childhood, and that was on the original Xbox. Love that game.
I do remember that. That's actually a ridiculously expensive game, isn't it? Like, I'm pretty sure that's one of the most expensive games on the original Xbox. Like, you're talking like 80 quid or whatever for it. Probably more even
now.
I
doubt my parents pay for that.
I mean not. You mean now? Hindsight on eBay, people trying to buy it kind of thing. Yeah. I heard really good things about that game, though.
I need to dig that out.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know if you're strapped for cash.
Yeah, but no, I've gone on the new Park Builder one. I've gone back on that. It's just a bit of fun. But in terms of plans, I think I'm gonna try and finish Fallout 4 before 76 comes out, because I don't know why I never finished Fallout 4, but I think I kind of just turned it off, and one day I just didn't go back on it. But I was pretty close to the end, so I might finish that off. And I need to revisit The Witcher 3. Obviously, that was in top 5 on my list, and I need to go back and finish the DLCs, which. I'll probably, as I said with Bethesda, I'll be doing the opposite, and I'll be starting The Witcher 3 all over again to do that. Yeah.
That's a proper challenge, yeah, then, you know. Only completed that game recently enough, that's a labour of love.
I got the shit ending, so I need to redo it and do it justice.
Oh, I think I got the best ending, actually.
You bastard.
I was a good girl, talking. I say, but it's interesting. So a bit of Fortnite and a bit. Has season 5 started on Fortnite or season 4?
2 weeks, I think. One or two weeks.
Cool.
What are you playing?
If you'd asked me this last week, I would have only had one game to say, which would have been actually Baldur's Gate. You know, the old PC game. I picked it up in one of the good old game sales, for like €2 or something. I mean, this is a game I used to play at a friend's house back in the day. Like, it's your proper isometric old school PC RPG, lots of frustrating mechanics to it, but also it's cool because you can just go, if you like fuck something up, you can just go on the console command bar and just like put in a code and regenerate like the item you accidentally threw away or something, which you can't do with console games, so that's awesome. But I've been messing around with that, and it's just kind of a bit of a blast in the past. But actually, this week I borrowed the new God of War off a friend, and I've started playing that. I'm maybe 6-7 hours in. I'm enjoying it. Like, it is. I can see why. I can't quite see why people are saying Game of the Year, one of the best games ever, quite yet. But I can definitely see why it's getting a lot of hype and why it's scoring high. I mean, graphically, it's stunning. The gameplay is fun. You know, I like the kind of interaction between the son and Kratos, and like, it kind of humanizes Kratos, which in the old games, he was just like, "Rawr, I'm Kratos, kill blood." You know, it was like that. Like, but now he's kind of more, there's a bit more to his character, a bit more depth, which.
It's the beard.
Yeah, I think the beard has something to do with it, you know, and I'm a fan of beards, so, you know, there's a word for it actually, but I can't think of it, but Kratos and his handsome manly beard, you know, that they're I'm enjoying them at the moment, you know, it's a good game, and I'll maybe next week I'll have finished the game hopefully, and I'll be able to give kind of a better kind of overview of what it's all about, but it's a great game, and I can see why it's getting plenty of plaudits. But that's really it recently. Just as I said, Baldur's Gate and God of War in the past couple of weeks.
No, good stuff. I mean, as I said in the pod, I'm waiting for my mate to send God of War to our mate, then he can finish it, and then he's going to send it to me. So eventually, I'm going to get God of War as well. I think this has been a good couple pods. Obviously, it just shows a bit of insight into what type of gamers we are and what our top tens are. But as I said on the last week, feel free to send in your top tens. Do ignore the franchise rule if you want, if it makes it easier for you. But thought it just to expand our lists a bit if we did the franchise rule. But thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.